It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I want to speak now directly to America's children. Especially those who feel lost, alone, confused, or even scared. I want you to know that you are never alone and you never will be. You have people who care about you, who love you, and who will do anything at all to protect you. If you need help, turn to a teacher, a family member, a local police officer, or a faith leader. Answer hate with love. Answer cruelty with kindness. Our administration is working closely with local authorities to investigate the shooting and learn everything we can. We are committed to working with state and local leaders to help secure our schools and tackle the difficult issue of mental health. It is not enough to simply take actions that make us feel like we are making a difference. We must actually make that difference. In times of tragedy, the bonds that sustain us are those of family, faith, community, and country. These bonds are stronger than the forces of hatred and evil, and these bonds grow even stronger in the hours of our greatest need. Let us hold our loved ones close. Let us pray for healing and for peace. And let us come together as one nation to wipe away the tears and strive for a much better tomorrow. Thank you, and God bless you all.
President of the United States speaking after that horrible shooting in Florida where 17 kids were killed. I think 14 others are still in the hospital, one at least in critical condition. And so, this is an unfolding story. You know, it just happened. It's just been a few days ago, and yet it's amazing the rapid pace at which life moves on and other stories take its place. But I want to spend a little bit of time talking about this, and especially since, of course, immediately it morphed into some political issue over guns. In fact, there was a vigil of the kids of the high school. Now, this supposedly was the kids of the high school. I saw a picture of this, and they're kids, for heaven's sake. There's so much grief to express. They came to express their grief, and my theory, I'll just say right up front, is that people co-opted this particular gathering of the kids. I saw adult holding up a hand, a sign, "No more guns." And yet the text of the article talked about how the kids are leading this charge to take away guns, all guns in schools. You know, I don't think kids are quite that mature to think that globally. And yet there was an announcement on Fox News Sunday yesterday. Chris Wallace gave these kids lots of time. And this is kind of the gist of what they said. Let's listen.
Today, I'd like to announce that we have an event coming up to have everybody in the nation talking about what we're talking about. And one of the things we've been hearing is that it's not the time yet to talk about gun control. And we respect that. We've lost 17 lives, and our community took 17 bullets to the heart. And it's difficult to come back from that. So here's the time that we're going to talk about gun control. March 24th, we have the March for Our Lives, which you can find at marchforourlives.com, and expect to see us a lot. The March for Our Lives is going to be in every major city and we are organizing it so students everywhere can beg for our lives. Because at the end of the day, this isn't about the red and blue, the GOP and the Democrats. This is about adults and kids. And at this point, you're either with us or against us. We are giving all our politicians a clean slate, and in the next election, we are saying, if you are accepting money from the NRA, there is a badge of shame on you, because you are enabling things like this to happen.
This is a student-led grassroots movement, and this is not a debate. This is a discussion between Americans, because we've had too many debates before, and we've gotten nowhere. We need a discussion where we hear both sides. From the Republicans, they can talk about mental health care, and from the Democrats, they can talk about gun control. But what we need to do, here is come together, not as Democrats or Republicans, but as Americans, and work together to solve this issue through love and compassion, because this event occurred on Valentine's Day, sadly, and sadly, 17 people had to take a bullet to the heart, and so did our community. This is the time for change, and we can't let this ever happen again. I think this time's different because immediately the same day as the shooting, I immediately went on Fox News, in fact, and talked about how this needed to be different, how this could not be just another mass shooting. We've had 18 this year since New Year's Eve, and now is the time for discussion. It's not time for debate. It's time to work together. Our elected officials need to get together, overcome their political differences, and get some things done because they need to save the future of our country. And the future of our country are those children that are currently dying because politicians refuse to take action and continue to take money from these special interest groups.
Okay, Cameron Caskey and David Hogg speaking on Fox News Sunday yesterday. And there were other kids that spoke too, but I chose those two. You know, because my ears are keen to the phrases of the left and the way they do things. Methinks that some grown-ups are involved here. Methinks that in a very big way. Now, look, I'm not saying that nothing needs to be done, but my idea of what needs to be done is very different from saying that this is the NRA's fault, that we need to ban guns, that we, you know, if we aren't in favor of banning guns, that we don't love kids or we're in favor of them being killed. No, there's a sheriff that I'm going to mention a little bit later who he's a Florida sheriff. And he has a great idea, actually. His department has come up with a plan, and it is to train specific teachers, screen them, not every teacher, for mental health, for stability, then train them and let them be carriers and also other people in the building so that there are more people caring and that schools are no longer gun-free zones. But people, more skilled people, are able to counter this. Because when you don't have any pushback and someone comes in with any kind of weapon, whether it's a machete or a hidden knife or you name it, they can kill people with impunity if there's no greater force to stop them. And so I just want to insert that there are other avenues besides getting rid of guns. And of course, we get rid of guns and people cannot protect themselves. And I think the horse is out of the barn. We have, 300 million guns on the streets somehow. And we have that right as Americans because we know that in other cultures, in other times, in other places, the people most often are disarmed. That's how totalitarians take over. And so that's why we fight, to keep our ability to protect ourselves and our families. But I'll get into that in just a few minutes because Dr. John Lott will be joining us to talk about gun control and all the things that I've just kind of hinted on upon now. But I want to talk to you about, let me go back to the statement by these young men. I just see these phrases. I know the left so well. They come up with these artful phrases. I do not believe for a second that these kids came up with these talking points. It was Valentine's Day and 17 kids took a bullet to the heart. This is classic leftist writing. And of course it's true. It's always partially true. Of course it's true. But they trade on emotions. And this whole business of you're either with us or against us, really? So people that don't oppose the NRA are wanting students to be killed. That's the premise, and that's the way they're putting it on purpose. And then, of course, the use of the word change. Everybody knows what change means to the left. So we'll talk more about that. I'm sure we will, because they're going to have this march on March 24th. And, of course, it's student-led. These kids, these 16, 17-year-old kids, are organizing a nationwide rally in the Capitol all by themselves. They have no help whatsoever. No help with these statements. At least that's what they would have us to believe, and I don't believe it. But I want to get into a little bit more about that we're learning about this shooter. Some interesting things. I think that Florida news services had as interesting a follow-up as anyone that I saw. And I just, they actually gave a timeline of Nicholas that I had not heard before. Perhaps you had, I hadn't. But it says that Nicholas Cruz jumped out of an Uber car and walked toward Building 12 of the school, carrying a black duffel bag and black backpack. A man inside spotted Cruz and knew he was a former student, a troubled kid. He radioed a coworker and within a minute heard gunshots. The 19-year-old was wearing a maroon shirt, black pants, and a black hat. The man, whose name was blacked out from the sheriff's affidavit, told detectives Cruz was moving purposefully. Cruz slipped into the building, entered a stairwell, and extracted a rifle from his bag, authorities said. He shot into four rooms on the first floor, going back to spray bullets into two of the rooms a second time. Then he went upstairs and shot a single victim on the second floor. He ran to the third floor, where, according to a timeline released by the Broward County Sheriff's Office, 3 minutes passed before he dropped the rifle and backpack, ran back downstairs, and quickly blended in with panicked, fleeing students. Florida State Senator Bill Galvano, who visited the third floor, said authorities told him it appeared that Cruz tried to fire point blank out of the third floor windows at students as they were leaving the school. But the high impact windows did not shatter. Police told Galvano that it was not that difficult to open the windows. From the time Cruz entered the building until the time he left, only 6 minutes had passed. During that brief time, he shot more than a dozen people, including 17, fatally. After the rampage, he walked to a Walmart and bought a drink at a Subway restaurant. Then he went to McDonald's, and about 40 minutes later, a deputy saw him walking down a suburban Florida street, grabbed him, but he didn't put up a fight. And of course, we now know more about the aftermath of this, but I just thought that was very interesting. This is a very affluent suburb. The median house price is $600,000. I saw a picture of Cruz's home. It's a beautiful home. Remember that both of his parents have died. His dad several years ago, he's an adopted child, and the mother died just a few months ago of pneumonia. Some other things I want to mention that stood out at me. He told police that demons, voices, told him how to do this shooting and exactly what to do. You know, I believe that. I was discussing this with someone about when it's mental illness versus demonic activity. And as a Christian, of course, not just because I'm a Christian, because I believe this is true. There is wickedness and there is evil. Look, all of these horror movies that people go to, this fascination with things we can't see. I believe there are things we cannot see. And I believe there are evil forces. It's spelled out in the Bible. I believe that the battle that we fight is one often that we cannot see. It's principalities and powers that we cannot see. And yes, I believe that demons are at work. I don't believe they just choose hapless victims. I think people probably have some cooperative spirit, something that they compromise in some way. There's something in them that is responsive to this. And I think if you kind of separate demons generally, it seems to me, I'm no expert, but when there is death and destruction, I just think it's demonic because that is exactly what their father, Satan, is all about, is destroying, murdering, brutality. And so he attributes it to demons, and I absolutely don't doubt that at all. Some other things. They're going to be seeking the death penalty on Cruz. There were 1,000 people at that rally, school rally. Here's the picture I was talking about. This adult man in the midst of these kids holding up a sign that says, enough, #enough. I'd like to know who that man is because I'm telling you these kids are not organizing this all by themselves. They're shouting, some of them. It says members of the crowd spontaneously started shouting, no more guns, no more guns. Yeah, spontaneously, I would imagine they're probably well-placed because I would imagine these kids are so grieving that it's probably not student-led because their thoughts are probably grief and mourning. And besides, they're young. And besides, they're easily led. And so people are taking advantage of that, and we'll see where that leads. You know, the suspected shooter's home, they visited hit 39 times over the last 7 years. And there are so many warning signs. The FBI had a report from someone who knew him well, warning them. They did nothing about it. Florida Governor Scott is asking for the resignation of Christopher Wray, the director of the FBI. There's a lot to say about this, but stay tuned. We'll say it with John Lott, who joins us next. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hi, this is Kirk Cameron, and I am honored to be partnering with the Ministry of Preborn and American Family Radio to help moms choose life.
Actor Kirk Cameron supports Preborn.
My four oldest children were adopted. That is because of caring and compassionate people who help those young mothers choose life. My wife is an adopted child, and her birth mother chose life for her. If it weren't for those caring individuals that help those young moms value the sacredness of life, I wouldn't have my wife, I wouldn't have my four adopted children, and the two natural born children that we have wouldn't exist either. My whole family is here because of people that are involved with ministries like Preborn.
Underwrite a free ultrasound and help save a baby's life. Go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say keyword baby. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
Here on American Family Radio, this is David Wolin with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Jesus had become famous. People everywhere were speculating about his identity, but Jesus wanted his disciples to decide for themselves, so he asked them, "Who do you say that I am?" It was the pivotal question then, and it still is. What's your answer? Who do you say that Jesus is? Well, in that moment, Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And then Jesus turned to Peter and told him who he was. Jesus said, "I tell you that you are Peter," which means rock, "and on this rock I will build my church." And the same is true for each of us. We won't know who we truly are until we know who Jesus truly is. You can get the print edition of Anchor Devotional delivered every month. Visit getanchor.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu. Today.
The McKinney School District in Texas will no longer hold graduation ceremonies at a Baptist megachurch. The school district had asked Prestonwood Baptist Church to cover up or remove a cross inside the sanctuary, but Pastor Jack Graham refused, calling the district's decision to move graduation a cowardly decision. Graduation ceremonies have been held inside the massive auditorium for 13 years without nary a complaint. But a small group of atheists and Muslims, along with the Freedom From Religion Foundation, objected, citing constitutional issues of having a secular event inside a church building. The school district said families from other faith groups felt uncomfortable inside a Christian church. So now graduations will be held in a public arena where parents will be charged $25 per seat. I suppose that's the price they have to pay to keep the atheist happy these days. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Today, I'd like to announce that we have an event coming up to have everybody in the nation talking about what we're talking about. And one of the things we've been hearing is that it's not the time yet to talk about gun control. And we respect that. We've lost 17 lives, and our community took 17 bullets to the heart, and it's difficult to come back from that. So here's the time that we're going to talk about gun control. March 24th, we have the March for Our Lives, which you can find at marchforourlives.com, and expect to see us a lot. The March for Our Lives is going to be in every major city, and we are organizing it so students everywhere can beg for our lives. Because at the end of the day, this isn't about the red and blue, the GOP and the Democrats. This is about adults and kids. And at this point, you're either with us or against us. We are giving all our politicians a clean slate, and in the next election, we are saying, if you are accepting money from the NRA, there is a badge of shame on you, because you are enabling things like this to happen.
Well, that's the voice of Cameron Caskey, and that was that that appearance on Fox News Sunday yesterday that we just played, and that's just a portion of it. If you're not with us, you're against us. If you are not with us in reducing guns, you are against all students, all teenagers, and you actually want us to be killed. That's the inference there. And so I've already made my comments about that, but I want our guest to comment on this as well. Because John Lott really spends his time studying the effects of guns on crime, how to prevent it. He is the founder of crimeresearch.org, crimepreventionresearch.org, by the way. And John is a professor that I've known a number of years, who I always have to introduce him this way, because I know personally that because of his strong position on what's happened with guns throughout the world, the statistics that he's gathered, and by the way, he is a statistician, he got himself in a lot of controversy as an academic and now really has devoted his life to covering this very controversial subject. He's written numerous articles, numbers of books. More Guns, Less Crime comes to mind. That's one of the best ones that he's written. He's written many. And he joins us this morning to just kind of comment on this latest shooting in Florida. John, thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me on.
All right, John, I don't know if you saw that appearance by those kids yesterday, but you at least heard that clip. I just want to know what you think about those kids saying those things.
Well, I mean, I guess the problem that I have generally and what I find so incredibly frustrating is that the different types of proposals that gun control groups are putting forward wouldn't have stopped this attack. They wouldn't have, you know, you look at the number one type of proposal that's been put out for years now by gun control advocates, the so-called background checks on private transfers, you know, universal checks. We had people within a couple hours of the attack on last week that were calling for it, and yet it wouldn't have stopped that attack. It wouldn't have stopped a single mass public shooting during this entire century. You had people like Senator Nelson on the TV within a short period of time, just hours, calling for banning gun purchases by people on terror watch lists. Well, again, there's not one mass public shooting that would have been stopped by that, but even then he mischaracterized the whole debate, because the difference between the Republicans and Democrats was over whether or not you should have judicial review. The Democrats just wanted to have some unnamed bureaucrat in Washington or someplace be able to put people's names on the list. And the Republicans' proposal was that, well, fine, they can put the names on the list, but if somebody's being prevented from being able to go and defend themselves, then the government has to meet some low standard of evidence, probable cause, to be able to justify that, and they have to, which basically means something like they're like 20% sure that the person could be a danger to others. You know, it's not like preponderance of the evidence, which is 50%, or beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the criminal standard that's there, where you're virtually certain about what's going on. But you know, just probable cause, and the Democrats didn't want a judicial review. But here's the problem. They go through all these things that they want to have that don't work, and yet the one thing that we know will work, they won't even talk about. We can't even get a serious discussion about, and that is these gun-free zones. The attack last week was, again, another attack where guns were banned. And at some point, people have to realize that if you look at the statements that these killers make, if you look at just the statistical evidence that, you know, over 98% of these mass public shootings since 1950 have taken place in those areas where people aren't allowed to defend themselves. All the mass public shootings in Florida have taken place where people aren't allowed to defend themselves. At some point, people have to realize that these aren't random. I mean, these killers may be mentally ill in some way, but they are not stupid. They want to kill as many people as possible or maim as many people as possible. And they know that if they go to a place where nobody has a gun, if people can't defend themselves, they're going to be able to kill more people. And, you know, people talk about putting armed guards, police officers at these places. I don't think people understand the difficult job that having somebody in uniform faces, the basically an impossible job, because what happens is that you put somebody in uniform in a place, you put one man in uniform or one person in uniform, it's like putting a sign on them, a neon sign that says, shoot me first. And the benefit of having a concealed carry with staff or teachers or others at a school is that the killers don't know who they have to attack first. And that takes away a lot of the strategic advantages that these killers have.
You know, John, did you hear, I just read an article about, you may know about this, Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd from Florida, who is offering a plan that his department has implemented in one, at least at a junior college in his area. He calls it the Sentinel Program. And the idea is this, that you arm teachers with concealed weapons and train them to effectively defend students should the need ever arise. It also talks about how it's extremely vigorous. He only selects teachers with impeccable crime-free backgrounds, and then the teachers undergo rigorous training, standards beyond what are normally required, and then they subject teachers to intense psychological evaluation, and then they make them, after they make through all of, get through all of this, special deputy sheriffs. What do you think about that plan?
I think it's a great idea. I mean, it gets around to state law by making them deputy sheriffs. You know, I have to say, some of the things seem a little bit overkill in the sense that you know, you have to, I don't know what an extra clean criminal record is. Either it's clean or it's not clean. You know, and, but, you know, if it helps sell it, fine to go and say things like that. But I think making people deputy sheriffs is a great idea.
It was interesting to me. I know this is not so such news to you, John, but these, like at this school in Florida, it, as I understand it, there were two or three armed security guards, but the building is so vast, there was no way they could get there that quickly, and certainly the police couldn't either, because I think, didn't he kill all of these students within like 3 minutes?
All right, well, we, as far as I know, we still don't know what happened to the one armed police officer who was there.
Is there and, was just one then? You know, was there just one? Did I misunderstand that?
Yeah, there was just one.
Okay.
And I heard the sheriff talking about it just a couple days ago, and he was saying they were still investigating where the person was. It's not even clear he was around there. You know, presumably he was, but you know, it just all I can say is, if you look at past mass public shootings where we have somebody on the premises who is there, who can stop the attack, time after time, they're the first people attacked. If you have one of these killers, these killers have a huge strategic advantage by choosing the time and the place of the attack. If there is people there, if there are people there who have guns, they can either not attack there, or they can go and shoot that person first, or they can move on to some other target, or they can wait for that law enforcement to leave the area. And, you know, there's so many vulnerable targets that are there. It just, you know, over the last week, I don't know how many different theories I've heard about how we want to try to stop these things, you know, having armed guards at each of the doors and having metal detectors and things like that. the point I would make generally is that these people are planning these attacks at least 6 months in advance. That's about the shortest you find. Often it's a year. Often it's even more than 2 years. The Sandy Hook killer was apparently spent 2.5 years planning his attack. And so, you know, the notion that if somebody plans the attack that long for a place like a school or a movie theater or a mall or whatever, you have a really hard time hardening the target enough to prevent those individuals from being able to get through. And, you know, if you have one armed guard at a place, and let's say he's right at the entrance, again, that's a very difficult job. You know, first of all, it's an incredibly boring job. I don't know if you follow the air marshals, but the air marshals have an amazingly high turnover rate. These guys, it's like 50% leave the job after like 4 months or something like that. And the reason is because they're just sitting in a seat. They can't go to sleep. They're not supposed to read anything or have anything else divert their attention, and just sit there for usually just going across the Atlantic back and forth, you know, a six-hour flight or whatever, just sitting in a seat and virtually nothing ever happening is an incredibly boring job. And to have a police officer, let's say at an elementary school or a middle school, how often are they going to actually do anything for those places? And so you have somebody who's there with a metal detector, one guy. Now, maybe you want to have three armed guards or something. But that's going to be, you're talking about real costs there for the 100,000 public schools that are out there to go and guard these things. And what I would point out is the teachers and staff are already there. You know, why not let them do it? Plus, they have the advantage that they're not in uniform. Plus, you don't want, if you're going to have a staff member or a teacher or a few of them having guns, you don't want to publicize who has it. Even if you were to have, you know, this police officer wearing civilian clothes, my guess is the students are going to realize pretty quickly that this person's not a regular staff or a teacher. And so he's going to be outed. You want to have somebody who's going to be there anyway, who has a regular job there, and it'll be difficult for the students who might want to do the attack to figure out who they have to take out first.
You know, John, of course, to you and me, this makes perfect sense, but to like those kids at that vigil who have already been encouraged to start chanting no more guns, who are so frail emotionally and wounded, they're young and impressionable. It's very difficult. I think it's going to be hard to make that case to them. How would you do that? If you had a 17-year-old child, you knew one in that school, would there be any different way that you would present it than you just presented it to me?
Yeah. Look, the big problem is they're not being presented with these arguments. The only media that I've done is some radio shows and Fox in a debate, but you know, if you look at all the other networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNBC, CNN, MSNBC, they either don't have anybody there or they have people that I regard as not very smart defending this side. And I think it's a conscious effort for them to have people that are weak in making the presentation. You know, so they call up somebody who wants to be on TV or whatever, and they, you know, they have them on. You know, the fact that they don't even have people on a lot of the shows. I mean, I maybe get a call from CNN or something like that, but the producer, all they want to know is what arguments I would raise so that they can go and bring it up to their panel, which is all on one side, and have them poo-poo it without anybody explaining why they're wrong on it.
Yeah, no counter. No counter. John, can you hold on for a second? Because when we come back, I'll certainly want you to finish your thought, but also I want to move to the FBI's dropping the ball on this. That's the, kind of putting it mildly. And also what you see coming as a result of this. You know the players, and we've been through this before where the left, you know, starts to complain and demand gun control laws. Also want to talk to you about this notion that there were 18 school shootings so far in 2018, because that's been something repeated over and over again. And also the international response to this has been interesting. So stay tuned. My guest is John Lott. By the way, it's crimeresearch.org for any of John's excellent articles and research on this very issue. Crimeresearch.org. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. 19-year-old Nicholas Cruz entered Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, after previously being expelled, killing at least 17 people and wounding others. Predictably, the conversation devolved into a gun control debate. The reality is, however, that this massacre is not a Democrat or Republican issue. It's a sin issue. Pass all the gun control legislation you want. Evil men will find ways to commit evil. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. It's time we got serious about sin.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
This is Tim Armstrong from the Worthy Walk radio program, inviting you to join us as we study the scriptures verse by verse each day, Monday through Friday at 6:30 p.m. Central Time here on American Family Radio. We will study the Word of God and learn to apply its truths to our lives each day. The Worthy Walk, Monday through Friday at 6:30 p.m. Central Time on American Family Radio.
It is evident to me that we're in the fourth quarter. We want to discuss affairs of the day in an effort to convey to you how to navigate them biblically, because the ultimate thing that has to be proclaimed is the gospel. And what we need, and what I'm seeking God for and crying out to the Lord for, is that we would, in this season of time, would return to preaching the gospel with boldness and without hindrance.
Tune in to the Hamilton Corner, weekday afternoons at 5 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We still have seats available for our September tours of Washington, D.C. and Williamsburg. Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, that's one tour. And then Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, that is a separate tour. Now, we put them back to back so you can do both. If you're flying in from Texas or Montana or California or wherever you may be coming from, so that you can do those tours back to back with us if that's something you so choose to do. Now, Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will be with us all along the way as our historian. Stephen will add context, he'll answer questions, talk about the people, the places, the events that make up our early American history. So for more information on this Spiritual Heritage Tour, go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com for the September tour information.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. After the latest murderous attack on a school, victims, parents, and politicians are demanding that something be done to make sure this is the last mass shooting. President Trump, who has been singled out for highly charged criticism of his past support for the Second Amendment, is in damage control mode. He'll be holding listening sessions this week. If, as seems predictable, these events merely turn out to be platforms for denouncing him and gun rights, the pressure to ban certain weapons will only grow. The question must be asked, if it is already illegal to trespass in a school and shoot children there, why does anyone think that individuals willing to break such laws wouldn't violate one prohibiting them from having the weapon with which to do it? Want to do something effective? Start protecting schools as we do government buildings and other potential targets. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. We're talking about, in the aftermath of these school shootings, What's next? And of course, the students are saying they're organizing all on their own, these 16, 17-year-old kids, this nationwide protest, organizing all of these in every state, every major city, coming after the NRA, and of course, saying that if we're not with them, we're against them. In other words, if we are concerned about keeping our ability to arm ourselves, that we are in favor of kids being killed in schools. That's basically what the kids said, but of course, I don't really think it's just the kids. I think it's adults behind them, whether it's the Bloomberg money behind this, I don't know, or George Soros, or a combination, I don't know, but that's my suspicion. I want to tell you that Governor Tim Scott in Florida, of course, you probably heard this, but if you haven't, you need to. He called for the resignation of FBI Director Wray because the FBI, it's just amazing what they did not do. There was a report from someplace, I believe it was something about Alabama, somewhere in Alabama, where a person saw Nicholas Cruz say on some sort of a YouTube video that he wanted to be a school shooter. But then more incriminating was that not long before the shooting, within a month or so, a friend, someone close to Cruz, called and reported the details, how many guns he had, that he was planning on killing people. And no one ever did anything about that. And by the way, I heard a former FBI agent say yesterday that the method of reporting these kinds of things has changed at the FBI. It's now going to a central location in West Virginia. All the calls come into that station. It is not agents who are fielding those calls. It's other people that can be hired for less money. It's just an interesting sidebar. But Chris Wray released a comment on this. He said the FBI's failure to take action against this killer is unacceptable. Actually, I apologize. This is Governor Scott's statement. The FBI's failure to take action against this killer is unacceptable. The FBI has admitted that they were contacted last month by a person who called to inform them of Cruz's desire to kill people and the potential of him conducting a school shooting. 17 innocent people are dead, and acknowledging a mistake isn't going to cut it. An apology will never bring these 17 Floridians back to life or comfort the families who are in pain. The families will spend a lifetime wondering how this could happen. And an apology will never give them answers they desperately need. We constantly promote see something, say something, and a courageous person did just that to the FBI. And the FBI failed to ask, to act. See something, say something is an incredibly important tool, and people must have confidence in the follow-through from law enforcement. The FBI director needs to resign. John Lott is my guest with Crime Prevention Research Center and the nation's really leading expert on this issue in relationship to guns. But, John, I would like to know what your thoughts are about the FBI's culpability in this and about Rick Scott's plea for Christopher Wray to step down.
Look, I mean, I understand his anger on this. I guess my point would be, and you know, heads probably should roll, but you can't depend upon being able to find out these people in advance. You know, so much of this discussion has been things like, well, you know, mental health, we need to identify these individuals beforehand. I think that's just a pipe dream. You know, this guy was particularly egregious in terms of his statements about, you know, being a professional school shooter and stuff. But so many of these individuals, you know, hindsight's 20/20 when they're looking for characteristics that should have set people off. You know, so some people are saying, well, the fact that he posed for pictures with a gun should have been a warning sign. Now, that seems pretty ridiculous to me. Things like saying he's a professional school shooter, wants to be that, that seems more serious. But here's the problem, and that is the notion that somehow you're going to be able to catch all or most of these people before they do it is a pipe dream. And what you need to talk about then is what's your backup plan? What do you do when you can't identify these individuals? So, and just to speak about mental illness for a second, you know, people say, well, we just need more funds for mental illness. You know, over the last decade, about 60% of these mass public shooters were seeing mental health professionals, either psychiatrists or psychologists, before they did their attacks. And yet, in that one single case, did a psychiatrist or psychologist identify these individuals as a danger to themselves or to anybody else? And, some of these killers were seeing some people who were considered the top experts in the world in their area. The Santa Barbara killer there, who used a knife to kill some people and a gun to kill others, he was seeing the head of Los Angeles Children's Hospital psychology department. And he was seeing two other people too. And none of them identified him as a danger to himself or a danger to others. And there's a whole literature in psychology about their inability to identify these people. You have to realize also, on average, the typical person with mental illness tends to be less violent than the general population. And they also tend to be more likely to be victims of violent crime. So just because somebody may have some type of mental illness doesn't mean that they're not able to make other rational decisions or make decisions about defending themselves. And so just having some type of blanket thing about mental illness, I think, would create more problems than benefits.
Plus, I think you'd get into that really dangerous area of others calling in your name and accusing you of such things, or even family members who have something against you. And that's the danger that we get into with this, which argues against that. But in the case of Nicholas Cruz, John, really, though, this was extreme. In other words, I think the police went to his home 37 times, and the call was made by a friend. It seems to me that was a huge, that loop should have been closed, and I think something should have been done. He's an extreme example, don't you think?
Yeah, no, definitely an extreme example. But I guess my question is, and I don't know the answer to this, is why didn't they ever arrest him in those 39 times that they went to the home? I'd like to know exactly why they went to the home each time. Was he making too much noise? Even if you get enough noise complaints, you think at some point the police would arrest the individual. And, why wasn't something done by local law enforcement other than just showing up at his home? They must have known that he himself must have been identified by the police as being a real problem after that many times. Why was he never arrested?
I don't know, and I'm sure we'll find out. Well, at least, we'll be hearing more and more details about this. I do want to ask you about something else. A lot of misinformation, immediately I knew ABC began reporting that Nicholas Cruz was a member of the white supremacist group. And then there is an article on, and then from my understanding, that was debunked, that the leader of that white supremacist group claimed he was a member, but that he was not. Then there's an article in the Daily News, and the headline says, "Trained by the NRA, the school shooter excelled in marksmanship program sponsored by the NRA." I don't know about that. Do you know anything about that?
No, I just heard that he was a cadet at the school, is the claim. And then I heard some of the students who were cadets there were kind of amazed because they don't ever remember him being involved in the program. So who knows about a lot of these things.
But the link with the NRA, of course, the kids, and that opening clip I played, I think you heard that, we're talking about, they, of course, wove the NRA into their statements about politicians should be ashamed that they are funded by the NRA and it's killing kids. That's the narrative here.
Right. Here's the deal. I don't know how many tweets or whatever I've had over the last week about saying I have blood on my hands or seeing that others have blood on their hands. If anybody has blood on their hands, and I don't like to make the debate even coarser than it already is, are the people who are supporting laws that have nothing to do with stopping these attacks. I mean, if they just want to feel better that they're doing something like having these background checks on private transfers, beyond the background checks that we have right now, if I were on the media, I'd ask people, can you name one single mass public shooting this century that would have been stopped by this type of law that you're trying to push. And they're not going to be able to point to them. And so, you know, if you're spending your energy fighting against proposals that would work and instead pushing and demonizing those who are pushing for proposals that would work and fighting for proposals that wouldn't do anything at all, just make owning guns more costly for law-abiding citizens, you know, you have a real issue there about who's responsible for the violence. You know, so if people want to go and bandy that type of language around, they need to be careful that it doesn't actually apply to them more than the people that they're attacking. But, you know, some of the comments that I heard on the intro about the amount of money that the NRA spends donating to candidates, during the last two congressional cycles, from 2013 to 2016, the NRA donated something over $2 million to congressional and Senate candidates for the federal level. At the same time, Michael Bloomberg donated something over $48 million. Over that period of time, Bloomberg's group outspent all the gun self-defense groups by about 7-1 on wow. TV advertising. And, you know, you find in 2015, in just two state Senate races in Virginia, Bloomberg spent over $2 million. You know, that's an incredible amount of money. You know, the NRA couldn't spend that much money on a couple races even if they wanted to.
John, we only have a couple of minutes left, and there's so many more things we could talk about, but I want to get down to, you and I have talked so often, but sometimes we then may forget the basics. So I want to ask you, why people listening who are obviously affected by this, all of us are, who are saying to themselves, maybe we do have too many guns, we just have too many guns and we should do something about that. Why can't we just do away with our guns? Everybody just do away with their guns. Wouldn't that stop this?
No, I mean, you have lots of countries like France and Belgium that have extremely strict regulations on guns. Semi-automatic rifles and handguns are banned. And yet, in 1 year, 2015, France had more casualties from mass public shootings, 532, than you had during the entire Obama administration. All 8 years of the Obama administration, we had 527 casualties. So a country one-fifth the population of the United States had more casualties in 1 year than we had in eight.
And that's France. And that's France, you said, right? France, because it dropped out for a second. France, yeah.
And so, you know, you know, here's the problem that you have with these things, and that is when you pass the laws, you have to make sure you're just not going to be disarming law-abiding good citizens, not the bad people. So just for crime generally, people can go to our website at crimeresearch.org, and they can see what happens when different places around the world have banned guns. Every single place that we have crime data for that's banned guns, looking at before and after the ban, has seen an increase in homicide and murder. There's not one place where those rates even stayed the same. And, you know, there's a simple reason for that. I mean, and that is that when you go and ban guns, who are the most likely people to obey the law and turn in their guns? It's going to be the most law-abiding good citizens. Just okay. As a general thing, let's say...
John, we're out of time. That's a good way to end. I'm sorry, we only have 15 seconds, but Dr. John Lott, Crime Prevention Research, it's crimeresearch.org, crimeresearch.org. If you want the very best information on guns and crime, that's the source. And so, John, thanks so much for your time this morning. And sorry, actually, I wish we could put you out of business, but I guess we can't in our lifetime. Thank you for joining me this morning. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.